to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Hello, Brains, and welcome back home. You are here on the Edge. You know this is the hot spot on the planet, right? I'm so glad that you are tuned in, getting ready to get turned up. Brains, are you that sibling that's entire life has been submerged or even suffocated by the needs and demands of a disabled, troubled, or mentally challenged brother or sister? Have you ever talked about it? Do you hurt inside? With anger, holding on to feelings of neglect and resentment towards your parents that you never let loose, that have been suppressed inside your body, causing emotional stress and pain? Are you tight and depressed because you've never been able to release the bitterness that you feel or felt? Then I'm glad you're here with us on the Edge. Our guest today is Cheryl Albright. She is going to talk to us about some of the things that we just talked about, that we've experienced. You know, I had a brother that was a little bit of a challenge. He didn't have mental challenges, but he was a hot mess in other ways. And he suppressed a lot of things because Mom always had to give him extra attention. Daddy always had to get him out of trouble. And so I was a little resentful. But Cheryl's story is more impactful. She has a brother that has autism, extreme autism, and once upon a time they called it mental retardation. And so we're going to talk to her about how she feels, felt, and how she's found love through God and yoga to help others go through that. So help welcome her to the Edge, Cheryl Albright. Hello, beautiful. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Miss April?
I'm good. Me and the Brains are good. I think this is a very, very interesting topic and subject because so many people suppress so many things in so many ways. And they feel that, you know, if they have a brother or sister that have challenges, that, well, that's just the way that it is and I'm just going to have to live with it. But there's a lot of pain and there's a lot of anguish. Start us at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about your upbringing and your brother and your parents and how you had to go through that and what you struggled through.
So, yeah, my brother's older, so I was just kind of born into his world. He's 4 years older than I was, so he was diagnosed before I was born. Grew up in a very, very small farm town in western New York, and, you know, life does exist beyond the Hudson River. So really rural town, and so nobody really talked about anything, ever. I don't remember having even a special ed class in my school until I was in third or fourth grade when the law said you had to have one. And so, you know, I grew up with him going to a completely separate school. If you didn't know me, you would have thought I was an only child. Grew up in a family where, you know, the motto is we don't say much. I don't know where I came from because I can't stop talking. So not really sure how that happened. I was the but why child. So, yeah, it was a completely different ball game, you know, in the early 80s. And so when I say he was diagnosed before I was born, this was before 1980. And it did fall under the mental retardation umbrella, which is terminology they don't even use anymore. They call that intellectual disabilities or cognitive disorders, or there's any number of words to use it. But basically, it comes down to your brain doesn't allow you to either act the way it's supposed to, so having a social conversation or being able to adapt to the world around you, and having the skills to be able to do even simple things. So regardless of the cause, there's something wrong with the brain that doesn't work. So we'll bring it back to your brains for whatever reason. So for him, it was autism. But any number of things can go wrong.
So now, anyway, as you were growing up and he also had You said he had mental, but he also had some physical challenges as well. And I know that that really took a strain on all of you, your mother, your father, and yourself. And you were telling me that your mom moved away from the home. How did that impact you?
Yeah, so my parents ended up getting divorced. They're that nine, I think the statistic, and I've never found proof of this, but people will say, you have an individual with a disability in your family, the divorce rate is like 90%.
If a child is sick or if a child dies, or it seems like that's, you know, that breaks up the marriage. So, yeah, I understand that. I don't know 95%, but I know that it's very high, the statistics.
Right. None of us can seem to find where that number came from or if it's legit or
right.
But it's you're right. The percentage is much higher than the neurotypical population. So my mom left when I was 12 and I stayed with my father. I get both sides of the coin as far as why that was. They didn't want to disrupt where I was going or where I was going to school. But either case, my mom physically left. My dad kind of mentally checked out because it had been so many years of up at 3 o'clock in the morning and my brother being up and needing, you know, his needs taken care of. And neither one of them got a whole lot of sleep. And I think that alone can take its toll on people. And I don't want to talk bad about any families or even my own that are going through it. They did the best that they could with the tools that they had at the time, but there wasn't a lot of tools and therapies and things available like there are today. Like I know I see some of my families that I work with that are running, we got to drop this one off at soccer and get this one over to therapy and do this, and there was none of that going on because we just, one, the services weren't there, and two, we were so in such a rural area that those things didn't exist anyway. So there wasn't, I don't remember the running around that a lot of families are doing now. We did occasionally, like over the summer, have people that would come to the home.
Right.
But I don't remember, not to the extent it is today at all. So there wasn't that kind of strain.
Right.
You know, I joke with both parents now. I'm like, I don't know what you two were thinking. Cause they're just two different, they're two very different people.
They are, and you know, as things happen, you know, again, sometimes parents have children, and they don't realize that, you know, it's some work, okay? You got to love, you got to change, you got to nurture, you got to sacrifice. Sometimes folks are just not cut out for it, so we don't want to talk bad about any parent, mama or daddy, you know, but again, it took a strain on you as a sibling. Now, your brother was nonverbal, so he was not able to communicate. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how he has since learned to communicate?
Sure. So when I was born, he had about 5 signs that he could, so with sign language, he could say more, please, and a few others. Eat, drink, that basic needs. He still has those signs today. But once he moved into a group home, wherever he was going to high school, a speech therapist figured out pretty quick that he's a smart guy. And they started using facilitated communication. And anybody that's in this world thinks it's hokey. So anybody in the therapy world is like, yeah, I don't think, you know. But he started writing about things that only he would know about. So we knew it couldn't have been the other person imposing. There is just no way that they would have known those things. There's no way. Even down to his, like, favorite food. So what was cool was he's like, yeah, I want to come home this weekend. This is what I want to do. And his behavior is significantly decreased for, you know, he can finally get his wants and needs across. So his behavior's declined. He's still a mischievous soul. So he's a plotter. Like you can see it in his eyes. He'll start looking at something and you're like, cut it out. Like I know what you're up to.
Exactly. And so, you know, he's trapped inside of this body. People forget that. You know, they look at the outward appearance. They look at the challenges. Mm-hmm. They look at the immobility. But they forget that there is a soul, there is a brain, and there is God inside of these human beings. And so I'm hoping that the next time that any of us look at an individual with a disability. Let me tell you a quick story. I'm at the club in Hollywood with my girlfriend, and we see this guy. He rolls up in the wheelchair, right? I mean, he's smelling good. He's looking dapper. And my judgment kicked in, of course, because of ignorance, not knowing any better. And I'm saying, oh, he's going to sit there and, you know, just kind of bob his head to the music. Cheryl, he got in that club. Honey, he was spinning in that wheelchair. He was doing, and the girls were giving him lap dances. Oh, my God, he was sweating harder than I was, and I was on two legs. And I promised myself, and I promised God, that I would never look at a person with a challenge or a disability the same again, because you have no idea of what is trapped inside of that person. So I commend you for, you know, all the sacrifice that you've been through, and I send love and light to your brother, because I know that there is a great human being trapped inside of that soul and that pain. So as you progressed, you know, you had to pretty much be an independent young woman at 12 years old. You had to deal with the challenges of your brother, your mom not being there, trying to grow up through adolescence. I'm sure that wasn't easy, as well as your father, like you said, kind of checked out. How did it feel when you finally found love for yourself and a relationship? Was that a strange feeling? How did that feel?
It was a strange feeling, and it took a very long time to get to that point, because you don't realize, like, all the things that you might pent up inside. So when I was in my 20s, I got diagnosed with all sorts of things. I had migraine headaches, and, you know, I had some stomach issues with irritable bowel syndrome, and I had this, like, list of alphabet soup, allergies, asthma. But as I know now, that's a lot of stress-related, or they can be. And so when you start, you know, I didn't realize that there was anything wrong. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't know what you don't know. And so I was on by the time I was 25, I couldn't tell you how many medications I was already taking. And I was like, something's not right here. Like, I shouldn't be this young and on meds. And they're like, well, you're allergic to this, that, and the other. I'm like, okay. Like, and you just listen to, because they're a professional, right? You just listen. And
right.
So when I was 29, it was when I took my first Yoga for the Special Child class. And so that course, they're really big on, you know, you need to feel it inside of you in order to be able to pass it on. So there's a lot of work that goes into just moving your own physical body. I had no clue that all of this stuff was all related. And so by the end of that first week, I was off the meds for the GI stuff, so the irritable bowel and that kind of thing. And then within 6 months, I was off everything altogether, and I've never been back on them since. So,
wow.
You know, yeah. Talk about healing and
that's
releasing.
Amazing.
And I will say the journey is not always pretty, but, you know, as you start releasing some of that, I didn't even know that you could, like, I just thought all that was woo-woo. Like,
right.
But it's not.
Right.
Like, it's totally not. And
it's
I didn't know, right?
But to
yeah.
Much is given, much is required, you know, and so you sacrificed a lot, but you're a pretty smart cookie. Yes, you are. And you went back to school, and you are a physical therapist, and you have created Soul to Soul. Tell my brains a little bit about that.
I'm actually an occupational therapist. I don't want to get the viewers too confused. But
oh, okay. So you know,
basically,
educate me. What is an occupational therapist versus a physical therapist? Educate my brains.
So, you know, physical therapy, if you have an injury or an illness, they get you back up, they get you moving. They might give you some exercises as they get you walking. Well, an OT is going to make sure you don't do that naked. So we're more concerned about how you're going to take care of you and your environment once that injury, illness, disability is either remedied or as you work through the process.
Okay.
And so when it comes to kids, their job, quote unquote, the occupation is to play. Whereas a physical therapist is going to make sure that they meet some of those more gross motor milestones. So they're going to walk and, you know, those kind of skills. Some people know OT as they think of fine motor, so like the things that you do with your hands. I'm a little bit more holistic than that. I want to know what's in your brain that's not communicating, and then what can we do to potentially change that? Because research shows the brain will continue to change itself until the end stage of dementia. When the brain actually turns to pudding, we're out. Prior to that, though, I say that the brain can change itself, and it, when given the right stimulus or the right, I've seen it with myself. I was diagnosed with ADHD in college. I have no problem attending. It was just things that weren't dealt with. People would say, well, maybe it was post-trauma, who cares? It doesn't matter.
Right.
The inattention, you know, I think had a lot to do with diet. It had a lot to do with working through whatever I was working through. And so, yeah, no, I would not be where I am today without a lot of those techniques, the breathing techniques, and the
right.
meditation. And so that's to answer your question, that's the biggest difference between OT and PT. And it depends on who you talk to.
Right,
so,
right.
Piece of it. And so then people are like, well, what's OT and what in the world does it have anything to do with yoga? Well, yoga has 8 different, what they call limbs to it. Some of it has to do with spirituality, if that's where you want to go with it, but you don't have to. There's the physical, everybody thinks downward dog or tree, and that, you know, the physical posture, that's what you're going to see in a gym or even in a lot of yoga studios.
Right.
I try my best to stay to the traditions. My teacher was traditional. I tried to and not offend or westernize that practice, because if you leave it at its roots, it's so much more impactful. And so, you know, she's hard on us. I'm not going to lie. There are times where you're like, oh, my God. But there's
right. But I mean, you know, that's what that one is, what the discipline
yeah.
is, because yoga is a mental discipline. So many people worry about the
yep.
posture, like you said, and can they do the downward facing dog? Can they do warrior two, tree pose? That's not it. It all is about connecting with the breath and being
yep.
centered and being balanced. So I get you. She should be hard on you.
And so, you know, yoga was designed to prepare the body for meditation. Meditation
mm-hmm.
is one of those 8 limbs. And so you have to move and stretch and be able to sit with a single point focus for a prolonged period of time. So that part of it has been a huge impact in my life, for sure, in being able to stay focused and on anything. Because, you know, all of us have full plates, right?
Right.
Nobody's story is any different. I had a business coach that was like, everybody's got, I forget what the words were. It was like, everybody has cancer and everybody has something. Like, so somebody's life has been impacted by something. No story
right.
is unique. And, you know, we all got stuff. But it's like, how are you going to put that in harmony? Because you can't necessarily make the stuff go away. Like, I can't make my brother not have autism.
Right.
And the people that claim that they can cure it, I don't even engage.
Right. And I mean, you know, again, they can make it manageable. You can look at a lot of people that are, you know, very high functioning. It just depends on where they are on
yep.
the spectrum. But let me ask
yep.
you, let me dial back a minute and let me ask you a question. You've been able to work through a lot. Was one of those things that you had to work through, was that a little bit of resentment? Did you have a little resentment towards your brother and the fact that he needed, you know, special needs, I mean, you know, even for him to be in a group home, and if it's subsidized, whether it's subsidized or not, there's still a lot of financial resources that your parents had to pour into that to keep him going, and the special attention and going to get him, and the outbursts and outbreaks and the whispering of, you know, when he came around. How did you feel? How did that make you feel?
I don't know that resentment is a word I would use toward him.
Okay.
I would say the resentment kind of probably went toward my parents.
Mm.
And it wasn't anything that they did or did not do, or it was just kind of, I kind of wish they just wouldn't have both checked out at the same time.
Okay.
That was probably more of the issue. I wouldn't say, like, I don't hold any resentment against him. I'm actually the opposite. I've met a lot of siblings that are like, I can't even... And they do have that resentment toward them. I'm not one of those. He did teach me a lot. And made me a great therapist. I can read nonverbal communication that a lot of people don't understand because they just don't. They didn't have that experience. So I wouldn't say it was harbored toward him at all. And I don't know that resentment is really the I wouldn't use those words. Now, I've met plenty of siblings that are out loud and proud, and they're like, yeah, I resent him, and I resent my parents. And I think to a certain point it was maybe I did even 10 years ago, but it's a choice, at least in my world. Like, and I choose not to do that, and I choose to keep going versus holding. And I still have a lot of work to do. Don't let me kid you. But I just don't. For me, that's not the word I would use.
I think it's beautiful that you don't use that word. And forgive me for the lack of my thesaurus here of picking the perfect word for feeling the emotional strain or constraints that you might feel. But I know that we've talked about it, that you are a woman that is deep in your faith and God and love, and so much love to the point where your brother is now going to be relocated to a group home a little closer to you and your husband. And you're also going to be taking care of your father, who is in hospice care. So now that you are the caregiver once again, and you are in love with an amazing man that your brother loves as well, how is that going to impact your life?
We're going to find out. I think, I don't know how to answer that, but I mean, you do, everything was a choice, right? Like, I didn't have to choose to do it. Like, I don't like institutionalized care, and that's kind of where they're both at the moment. So, without getting into the whole healthcare debate and the state of healthcare in this country and the cash cows that they are, you know, it was just kind of, my father's kind of funny because he doesn't fall into needing the level of care of where he's at, but he can't live alone either. He does need supervision at this point. And so that's where that idea came from. I was just like, well, I just cannot leave him where he's going crazy where he is right now. So then, you know, we've been talking about moving my brother closer anyway, especially since I took over guardianship, which is a legal term. So basically, for those that don't know, at least in this country, if you become somebody's guardian, it's like they never turned 18. So you are legally responsible for that individual.
Wow.
And certain rights get taken away because they just don't have the ability to make those kind of decisions, like get married, be charged of their own finances. And every state has a little bit of a different interpretation and in how that goes. But as of right now, I'm his legal guardian, and the 2,200 mile commute has just got to stop.
Right. So, that'll wear on you too. But you're also going to be taking care of your dad in hospice care.
Yes.
So you're going to have to find some. I know we were laughing about that. You said, "What is this word called balance?" But you're going to have to make some lifestyle adjustments. And, you know, luckily, like I said, you have a wonderful husband that is there to support you. And, you know, I just hope that you find time for yourself, that you be sure that you get rest break, that you, check in wherever you need to check in, if it's a yoga class, if it's with a group counseling, you know, whatever you need to find some balance in your life, because that's very important. Now, do you have children of your own?
No, I do not. So I say I now have two adult children. I do not have children. I have two fur babies. I have two dogs.
Okay.
And
that's,
I think that might have been, you know, I think that might have been by design. You know, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plan. At this point, I think that ship's pretty much sailed. I'm not chasing toddlers in my mid-40s. That's just insanity. I know people that do it. Just not one of them. So
I know, my girlfriend got pregnant at 46.
Oh, stop.
Girl, the baby is sweet as ever, but she said, I just don't know. But But again, God makes no mistakes. He makes beautiful, wonderful people, soulful people, heartful people that care, that put the they sacrifice themselves and submerge themselves for the betterment of others, and you have done that. And I just thank you so much for being on the edge with us, Cheryl Albright. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you if they want to find out more about your programs, find out about Soul to Soul, or maybe even some resources on how they might be able to unlock some of the feelings that they have been suppressing for years. How do they contact
you? Sure. So there's a bunch of different ways to get a hold of me. If this is another sibling that's listening to this, I hope there's plenty of them out there. There is a support group for you on Facebook. It's called SibNet. I don't control that, but I just wanted to throw that out there, that support is there, and I've been loving it since I found it, and it's just a great place to have that soundboard of, like, I think there's like 4,500 siblings on there from all over the globe. So I would highly recommend that. Yeah, and no parents are allowed. It's just the sibs.
Okay, so, all right. I got you.
I would highly recommend that one. As far as I go, there's different facets to my business. I try to be that support network hub. And if you go to Sarasota Bradenton Special Needs Community, we collectively, I think the local community will post things that are resources, and if parents have questions, they can post those things there. And it's just a place, it's a community. We want it to be a community so that people share their resources. And so if you're local and in the area, I would highly suggest getting on that. But it's for any special need, and I think they're not using that term anymore. They keep changing terminology on me. So any kind of disability, if you have somebody in your family that's local that has any kind of, so it doesn't matter if it's cognitive, behavioral, we don't care.
Right.
Join the community and we'll share resources. As far as business goes, yep, I own Soul to Soul Yoga and All Ages Therapy Services. I am an occupational therapist. I can do Zoom as long as the individual does not need my hands. Because some of them do. Some of them need some physical assistance. So if they have physical assistance, I really can't help it out over Zoom. If they're local, they can, by all means, schedule an appointment. So to find me there, it's soul, S-O-U-L, T-O-S-O-U-L, yoga, srq.com. And my email is the same. It's just Cheryl, C-H-E-R-Y-L, at soultosoulyoga.com. I do some professional speaking and training. So if you've got an organization that either needs to better meet the needs of their employees or needs training services, and I just got done doing a four-hour training with a preschool, whatever the case may be, I am more than happy to come in and make sure that we're, especially with the kids, laying the groundwork, so that they can meet those developmental milestones.
Well, I think that you're doing a phenomenal job. I really do. I want to thank you so much for being here on the Edge with us, Cheryl Albright. Brains, yoga, meditation, love, listening, kindness, thinking about somebody outside of yourself can do a whole lot of good in the world, like Cheryl Albright is doing. Please, Cheryl, come back and visit us. Keep us updated on what's going on. Give your brother a big old hug for me and tell him that Miss April and the Brains are loving him hard from on the edge, and we're sending Daddy love and light as well, okay?
No, thank you. I appreciate you, Miss April.
All right. I'll talk to you soon, Brains. Have a good day. I love you. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.